Let's do it.
Blog Talk Radio.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 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 oh. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you as your main man, Marvin Rome, and the crew. I'm coming to you live in three places today. I'm on the radio. I'm live and in person at the library, and we're doing it on Zoom all at the same time. It's triple coverage, folks. All day long, all day long. We're downtown library today with Brother Kevin Land and our Black History Month celebration. It's time for us to celebrate our day. The only way to do it is by looking at the energy that's created in us as God's chosen people. That's right, you, me, and we. So, for this work to be done, welcome to African American Empowerment Saturday. It's 365 days of the beautiful work that God's beautiful people have to do in our community. So we thank you for joining us today. Sit back, relax. We're going to learn about ourselves, our history, our culture, and so much more. So y'all don't have to worry about it. We're going to be bouncing around the radio and the room as well. So bear with me. Focus on what we're here to do as our component of African-American empowerment. Saturday, 365 days of you-know-what and you-know-who. But that's all right. We're going to get it right in just a second. You know what? Patience is a virtue. I'm being patient. Get my radio and thank the people in the audience. Welcome so much. Welcome so much. So I'm trying to balance it now. I'm doing four things at one time. That's right. We're incredible over here. So let me get my radio station intact and then we'll see what we're going to do next. All right. Welcome, welcome one, welcome all. All right. So I got the radio line going. I got the call-in line going. I got the show line going, and our mission is to empower the African-American community. That's you, me, us, we. And as we continue to do the work of working on ourselves, we have a simple mission. Our mission is to bring peace into our communities. Peace. How do we spell peace? It's P. It's for political. As people of color, black people, African-Americans, we need a political agenda, right? We need to understand how American politics work, right? So back in 1865, when they freed us, they said, all right, y'all go ahead. And we was like toddlers and little children and going out into the world without understanding the systems that they had already created. So they have several hundred years advantage of us on us because they know their systems and we don't, right? And so what is the American political system and how it works? And how can we effectively utilize the American political system to create opportunities for our children, for our families, right? How do we do that? We have to understand how each of those systems and those mechanisms work in our communities. And how can we use law? How can we understand the legal system? Because when we do, the jails will be empty if we know how to navigate the system. Hello? Poverty and violence and crime will be reduced if we understand how the law works, right? Understanding politics is so important that we don't have to fully engaged, we had to understand the engagement, right? And then how do we run people up into the American government that think like us and want to work for us to be able to bring the next piece in? And that's economics. That's the E. I'm spelling peace. So if you have a political agenda that focuses on economics, how do we think about creating an economic agenda that works for us, that we can build and create facilities like this where we can come to that's ours, that our children can come to for before, after school, and anytime programs, right, that are built and solely provided for us to recreate ourselves, right, to do the work that we need to do individually and collectively. How do we do that? Through an economic agenda, we can start creating opportunities for ourselves. We have to understand how capitalism works. Right now, we do a good job of
the consumer part of capitalism, but how about the economic piece where we're starting to create jobs and opportunities and institutions that define our own reality? How do we do that? How do we start creating jobs and opportunities and businesses and corporations, Fortune 500 companies that we create and that our young people who come from HBCUs and PWIs who have done the work can then work for us, right? And our corporations building business that help employ us so that we can keep the money in our communities and we can understand how that system works. We're going to have to be able to get a little bit smarter and a little bit wiser on how to use money to finance the operations that we want in life, right? And to be able to successfully eradicate poverty on our own, because part of the problem is poverty and that poverty mindset and that poverty spirit. So some of us have made it. We're good. I'm comfortable. But what about until all of us are free? None of us are free. And until we go back and reach one and get one and teach one, we haven't done our job successfully. So we have to do that work. Next is the A, right? Somebody say the A. Point at yourself. I got to get my A together. That's your athletics. It's health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, mental health, physical health, spiritual health, emotional health, right? You got to get your A in order, right? And what you have to do is you're going to have a routine. You got to have a diet. You have to have a fitness. You got to have a wellness program. You have to have a mental health program. You have to do these things that you're going to have to push away from the table because we lead the league in health disparities, lead the league in diabetes and high blood pressure. We all know it, but we ignore it. Like, you can keep eating the wrong food and the bad food and think it's going to change because you can take some pills. It don't work like that. You got to have a mental health regimen and a mental health program to keep you balanced and stable mentally, physically, and emotionally, because the work is being done, right, through the systems to keep you frustrated, angry, and full of anxiety and stress. The system is like that. So how do we step away from the system and begin to do things that work for us? C, relevant cultural programs like this one that give us positive information that allow us to feel good about who we are. So it's not just wearing the red, black, and green to talk about black power. It's talking about the mindset, right? How your mind works and how you feel about what you look like, the texture of your hair, the color of your skin, and the size of your nose and your lips. Because it's beautiful, because you are God's perfect creation just the way you are. And you got to be able to say that, because everybody else in the world does. Right? But we've been manufactured in a system to have us to look bad about us, because some of us are light, some of us are dark, and some of us are super dark, and some of us are super light, but we're all superhuman beings. And can we get back to humanity? Can we get back to being human beings that care and love for each other? But we've been raised in a system of violence and a culture of violence that created our ancestors to be less than human. And now here we are. The question is, what are you going to do with your freedom? And lastly, education. It's a comprehensive education that really looks at how we're going to use these tools and strategies and many more to advance our people. The work is on us now. The work is on us, and we're going to have to do that work one person at a time. And now is the Stan Macklin moment. Let's see if I can pull this off. Doing three things at one time now. It might work. Uh-huh. Is that it? Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. That's the peace concept. Sam Macklin. Right? Sam Macklin was a great man. He was a true king and a visionary. And my mentor. And Stan taught me a whole lot of stuff about being a man and being proud of who we are. And so I created this tribute to him and for him.
Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah,
I just,
man,
I
we
just
got
love
the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at. And this is what we're doing.
Our reality. Quit trying to get in to fit in. This is where it's at. And this is what we're doing for us. And that's the work that needs to be done in our communities.
in our homes and in our families. No one else is going to do the work for us but us. That's the real FUBU. It's us working together collectively and not just talking about each other, gossiping about each other, but really building each other up and having pride and dignity and love and self-respect and regard for each other. And now, it's my next part of my show. It's the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with my brother George. Let me key him up. Y'all don't know what I be doing over here. Come on, Mom. Here we go. I think I'm tripping without that. All right, here we go. I got that part right. Okay. All right. Now, y'all just got to bear with me because I'm doing the show simultaneously. Here we go. Brother George is coming up. We right here. We're not going anywhere. We right here. All right. Come on, Brother George. Welcome to the show.
One more time.
One time, like, y'all kind of did a little research. And, you know, sometimes he used to get in the middle of the show, and he was going to awakening, talking about Jesus and the things he believed in, you know, Christian-wise. And I never knew that about him. So when I'm introduced like that by his song, you know, I feel good about that. And I thank Brother Bob for doing that. Today, I'm not going to read, you know, about Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa. I'm going to talk briefly about it. So Kwanzaa, you know, was started by my life. And he and his associates were making an attempt to create a spiritual connection with things that we did not get. I'm really hoping that in the near future, it will begin to catch on and more of our people will celebrate it and celebrate the principle. You know, the minister was saying that you don't always have to learn things by heart, because it's like the Bible, those things are written inside us. And the way we know that is that this is a part of our culture, directly where it came from. And so those things are already written inside us. So the seven principles of Kwanzaa is written in you already. So knowing something by heart doesn't always mean something. Practice something that means something. With Willie Lynch, that's a different controversy to brother back to the mission or whatever, but whatever it is, it has impacted our people today, the things that were in that time. And so what I try to do is I try to read something about our people so that it can begin to reverse the trend of the black man and black woman at odds with each other, light skin, dark skin, still at odds with each other, not read. And we never see the trick out, because I try to tell sometimes in teaching that historically, if we realize who we were just before the our offer took place, we were the scientific mind to keep the world. So a lot of the books that were in this library were written by our ancestors. And there was a part in that letter that said you have to be careful of exposing them to things that are connected to them. In other words, if they don't have a picture and start reading books, their DNA is going to tell them, you know, you wrote these books. It wasn't like if they start reading, they would look the same in the eye and all that. Believe me, it was already some brothers and sisters that was already looking them straight in the eye. And it might have cost them their lives, but they were willing to take that chance. You know, so that's my segment. Brother Marvin, if you have a question of the week, give it to me.
I sure do. Thank you, brother.
question of the week is, how do we begin to do the work, all right? How do we begin as a community to do the work that we need to do to improve ourselves and our community?
Well, first thing is that you got to stop believing in your own self. I'm sorry, y'all.
That's his wife. Yeah, you can. That's the queen.
You know what that is? That's an indicator that the show was just about to start at 2 o'clock. So I keep that in my phone. But really, we have to start with our individual selves. We got to start believing in ourselves, and then we can believe in family members, and it kind of expands. It's not just going to be like a massive thing that happens. You know, when I took chemistry while I was out, and one of the things about chemistry, you learn about chemical reactions. And so when you keep adding something to something, eventually it will transform into something else. And for example, ice. Ice is water. And so as you add cold to that water, it'll have, and as you add more and more cold, eventually it will go through a process and it will just crystallize, just like that, into an ice cube. And so that's the way I'm hoping things will work out for our people, that we will gradually, you know, put little organizations together here, little organizations together there, and eventually just crystallize back into a sequence. And it's going to happen, you know, of the survival of our people. Evan, that's my answer, brother. Is that good enough?
That's sufficient. Thank you. Y'all get ready to judge your name. All right, so we want to welcome you all, right? So we're doing our show live. Usually we do it on the live broadcast today. We're here with celebrating Black History Month for 365 days, but since we got it captured into this month, because it used to be a week, so we're growing, right? We got a month then. But we're saying we should celebrate ourselves every day in the year just because of who we are, right? So we got great people here today, right? First of all, I got to welcome you, right, that you made it into the building, right? I really think this room should be packed and should be lined up around the building trying to get in here, get this with the more that we educate, develop ourselves, the more it'll come along as well. So we got Brother Kevin Lang, who's going to be our featured speaker today, right? Make sure you take time out to find his information in his book. We got a panel discussion that's going to happen. That's going to be great. But what I want you to do is think about how I can, one, apply this information to myself, right? And then how can I take it back to my family and into my community? It's three things that need to happen, right? It's individual, family, and community. Individual, family, and community. That's how we get change. It starts with individuals, right? Inside of those individuals, they're in families. And then that's those families of individuals are in communities. So if we can change each individual and each family, then we can change the community. That makes sense? So it got to start with you. Somebody got to say it starts with me. And y'all say, I can't hear y'all. Come on, don't be. Fill that room up with that, right? So we got a few vendors here, right? Sister came on, Sister Danny. She's going to tell you about her business, right? And then Sister Shay is going to tell you also about her business, right? Because one thing that we're also going to do on the economic side is to be able to understand the things that we're doing together so we can support each other, right? Let's pour into each other. Everybody else is doing why we can't do it, right? Everybody's talking about, oh, I'm broke, I'm out of money. Guess what? We keep feeding each other, all of us. Amen? Oh, yeah, I'll go to church today. Right. All right. So next up, I'm going to let you talk to Sister Danny. Just welcome everybody. Tell them about what you do for the opportunity. Glad to be here. I've spent a lot of years cultivating skill sets that I think our people and our communities can benefit from. My company is just Youth Consulting, and I work with companies that are at different stages of their business venture. Some in the ideation stage, some who are just looking to expand their business, some who are revamping their business ideas. So I focus on their business acumen, honing in on their intellectual property, defining their brand, and figuring out how they want to go to the market. So that's what I do with Cities Consulting. This is Shay.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. My name is Shay, and I am a licensed marriage and family therapist and life coach. I've worked primarily out of Maryland and Virginia, so my goal is to help change our community. There is a huge stigma with mental health. People are not getting treated. And a lot of people are entering into marriages when they are not taking care of themselves. There is just a lot of mental disparities that we as a people are not aware of. So if anybody would like any information, I have some business cards here. You can also get with Mark. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll get a pen. Thank you. All right. We have relationships, right? And the first thing is we all adults in the room. We got to get our relationships together, get our ships together, right? We got to get those ships sailing properly because a lot of us just don't get along. We don't. So I have to understand how to resolve our issues amongst ourselves, or it's just some people that you need to leave alone. You got to decide that, right? Some people you just need to get out your life, right? It's all about health and wellness. Because some people just don't fit what you're doing, right? And we have to understand that it's okay to put some people to the side, right? It's just not good for you. If he or she not good for you, right, kick them to the curb. As you say it, right? Nope. Now, I'm not saying leave people behind, but there's some people that will pull you down, right, where you're trying to go to where you need to go for your calling and your purpose in life. It's time to celebrate, y'all. We're going to start with Sister Naomi. This is my second daughter. You ready?
Hi, I'm Naomi. I am a senior at Armstrong High School, and I am a part of the Armstrong Leadership Program. And today, I will be singing with Evan Morrison for y'all.
Everybody rise. It's our song. You can come on out here, man. You can worship.
Let every voice sing to my heavenly, bring with the harmony of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise together in skies. Let it resound.
Come on, y'all.
Sing a song for the faith that the darkness has covered. Sing a song for the hope that the blessing has brought. They seem to rise in
flames.
The dead is done. Let us touch on still victory. It is one.
Yes. Thank you, Naomi. Y'all give Naomi a hand, right?
Where is he?
That song, we should all know. We should. You know there's some flack about them trying to sing that as an NFL Super Bowl, right? But that's our song. And some of us don't know the word, it's okay. But let's see if we can get the word, right? Because that's really powerful. We cannot forget. We can't get drunk with the wine of capitalism there and we done had some integration, right? Stepping a little bit, we got to reach back and get one.
Right.
That's our job. We have to grow together, right? We came over here together, we suffered together, we bled together, we died together, we're going to grow again, right? We're trying to refine and revitalize ourselves, our families, and our communities. So right now, we'll have our lecture for today with Brother Kevin. And the question is, why did they change the name from Jerusalem, Virginia? Oh, okay. All right.
He went to that.
I can tell everybody else. So I can talk a little bit more. He's going to talk about why did they change the name from Jerusalem, Virginia to Portland, Virginia, right? So if you don't know, he'll tell you. But also there's some questions right there. If you don't have the questions, let me know, and he's going to get you a copy of the questions, because there will be a question and answer. And then we have our chair set up here for our panelists to come up, and we're going to have a panel discussion right after the lecture is done. Here's Brother Kevin Lennon coming on through right now. He can turn his mic on. Guys, know us? Kevin. So that's the one, two, three. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? According to African system, I must get permission from my elders before I speak. Master Bishop, speak. Call your name. I know who those guys are. Go ahead, Captain Bishop. Write a book, Captain Bishop, speak. Go ahead, get together. Now, Mr. Speak. Why was the wisdom changed to cause him again? And raise the memory of Matt Turner. Why was the wisdom changed to coffin with him? And raise the memory of Matt Turner. Of my people, they say they know Malcolm X. But they don't know Malcolm. They know Jim Dunn. Because they haven't read, and they haven't listened to his speech. My people say they know that term. They don't know that. They know their problem and where stand. They started moving to birth other nations by their problem. They read the novel, The Confession of Nat Turner, by Graham Salmon, which is on the phone. But they have not read the course from Confession. We are here to determine if the Lutheran religion was changed to cause of religion to erase from our minds the remembrance of that time. Your Honor, I finish eight. The Confession of that term. My elder says, you get way out there sometimes, but you always accentuate. When we're doing Blog Talk Radio, I'm always accentuating, but you can't see. This is a Library of Congress, digitized copy, that term, submitted by his attorney, Thomas R. Gray. Everything that I say in Hebrew, I have highlighted in the professor. I don't like it, but you could take our ancestors and use creative licenses.
Can you hear?
I can. It's a little bit broke up.
Okay. All right, I'm going to try to keep the line open. Thank you for joining us. It's also on Zoom as well.
You have to check your ancestors. Last thing I just said about that, the incorrect, you have a confession. You do not have license to get to say what you want to say. Now, for me, with my information, is I have it on paper because the paper confession. And go page to page in time. Now, how do I write this verse? I want to get the bird couch. If I go too fast, let them know. Page 4, certification. In the confession of that term. Page 4, certification, listening capital. We need to understand members of the court. Convened at the Google Zone. On Saturday, the 5th of November, 1831, for the trial of Nat Turner, a Negro slave, this the province of Upper Moore, deceased. You hereby certify Thomas R. Gray was raised in his in our presence, and testified God stand to be full, about eternity. And furthermore, the card is one by the side of the magistrate of the court to state, if he has anything to say, my sentence of death should not be passed upon him. He replied, he had nothing more to say, and he had communicated to have been the threat. Given under our hands, he goes, I believe them. The 5th day of November, 1831, I see you. Keep on. It's 35. It was read in death present. That said, the confession of full speed and violent term. But sentence of death should not be passed upon him, he said, yes, nothing more to say than what he had communicated to Mr. Gray. So now his opportunity to speak to any man that was session. Then I have a court speech. All the language in the confession are not that. Do not let them steer you away from the document being having certain authenticity. When an attorney represents you, he or she is speaking legally. They're not going to deviate from a learned man's vocabulary. You're familiar with this. You got people who grew up in the hood, go off to Harvard and Yale. When they come back, they can't speak to the grassroots. The same thing here. Certain language in confession could not possibly be next. However, quotations from the Bible are next. Enslaved dialect is next. That's what we're dealing with today. In the 1700s, religion was very important to the people in Southampton County, Virginia. So they named this village Jerusalem. 1831, the year of the so-called insurrection. I said so-called insurrection, and I'll see you in a later while I said so-called insurrection. In 1831, Matt and his disciples killed 50 to 60 whites. In 1888, the village changed the name from Jerusalem, Virginia, to Copeland, Virginia. There are two explanations for why the change. The first one, when the village was incorporated into a town, they renamed it Corpus. The second explanation was when the people from Jerusalem got on the train going to Norfolk, Virginia, they were teased. Here come those Arabs from Jerusalem. That's the reason why they changed. That's the second reason why they said they changed the name. Names have power. Certain names command respect. I remember when I met George Grant. George said, I'm from Philly. Now, I don't know what he's got, how to do that, but he's from Philly. I was from Memphis. I tried the same thing. It didn't work for me. I'm from Toronto. I got my foot kicked. In South County, the name Jerusalem made reference to the Bible, but more so, it made reference to that church. Slavery was abolished, 1865. So blacks were getting wages. Bob might say, where they going at? Somebody will yell, ain't no more from Jerusalem. Or boss might call you a nigger. Somebody will say, he's too young. He don't know. Jerusalem was connected with that church. Do not change easily. But normally, it takes a revolution. As a matter of fact, there's a revolution. It's death. 2017, in Charlottesville, Virginia, Heather Hyde was killed when a white person drove his vehicle in a Charlottesville crowd. 2020 was the George Floyd murder. He decided putting graffiti on the Confederate statue, throwing the Confederate statue in the water. This wasn't just in the United States. This was in the UK. This was in Africa. This was all over the world. Next thing we know, Lee David Hasfield had to go. Jeff Stewart had to go. Schools, hospitals, McGuire Hospital, Faraday had to go. We had complaints for years about the Confederate statues on Monument Avenue. They complained for years about our children going to school for Confederate names. We had complained for years about streets with Confederate names to no avail. But when the people stood up, those names had to go. Naturally, lived in an area of South Patrick County called St. Luke's Parish. He lived in St. Luke's Parish. That's fast. He prayed. He read the Bible. In the confession, he prayed special attention to St. Luke. Why was he? He's from St. Luke's Parish. Turn your Bible to Luke 7. Why don't you tell y'all bring your Bible? She got to tell that Bible. But how do you say the end without a Bible?
Bring your Bible. Bring your Bible.
Chapter 13. Verse 31. Verse 20. How you doing? Hey, hey. 33. Luke. Chapter 13. Verse 31 to 33. I'll be going back and forth with the Good News Bible, King James Version, an 1800-year-old Bible. I've been using different Bibles. Father McCaffrey, I'm using the Good News Translation. Some of y'all, I can think I can understand old English. I'm being for real. It says, Jesus loves the good. Jesus loves the good. Listen carefully. At that same time, Pharisees came to Jesus and said to him, and go elsewhere, because Herod won't kill you. Jesus answered, now if you have read that scripture at home, this is J.C. speaking, read that. Jesus said, go and tell that father, I'm driving out demons, and performing cures today and tomorrow. And on the third day, I shall finish my work. Yeah, I must be on my way today, tomorrow, and the next day. It is not right for a prophet to be killed anywhere except in the booth. Jesus said he's going to finish his work in a day. What does a day mean? He didn't see. For 1,800 pounds, this pound weighs 10 pounds. I got 10 of them. I was about to be hauling around 10-pound Bible. But there's a section in here, symbolic language, of the fourth and the prophet. Symbolic language of the fourth and the prophet. And it says, a day is an indefinite time. It was spread years. God says, I work hard today. It doesn't mean I work 24 hours. It means I work to exhaustion. A day is also a year. That term was part of prophecy. You head towards movement, delivering after peace. You would die out demons, heal people, and he would die in Jerusalem after doing his message for 3 days, otherwise 3 years. 1828 to 1831, he would die in Jerusalem. Because the prophet must die in Jerusalem. Next, healed, and he passed his message on to the people that he saw. Page 9 of the confession. Listen carefully. Page 9 of the confession. of white masks here. Today's night of the confession, a white mask healed. This is next week. I have seen in the health. It was saying to me that the Savior was about to lay down the yoke. He had borne it for the sins of men. And the great day of judgment was at hand. About this time, I told these things to a white man, Apple T. Reckman, on whom he had a wonderful effect. And he ceased from his wickedness and was attacked immediately. A blood oozed from the pores of his skin. And after praying and fasted 9 days, he was healed. And the Spirit appeared to me again and said, as the Savior has been baptized, so should we be also. Exhibit C. Saying, take this exhibit C. The confession of nation. No, it's the birth of a nation. That is the birth of a nation by Nate Hawk. In that video, the next guy is Samuel Turner. Samuel Turner, he had the period with a bull whip for baptizing a white man. For those of you not familiar with the power of a bull whip, if snapped properly, it exceeds well over 700 miles per hour, breaking the sound barrier. That the scratching sound you hear is a minute sonic boom. The farmers don't like to use it on cattle because it tears the meat. This brings us to the human flesh, the human being. Exhibit D1. It's what the doctor women think. This white man, they committed a grand bad sin. The white churches didn't want to baptize him. The next new Jesus was coming. And he did not want this man to face eternal damnation. So he baptized the man. In the movie, Jack went to his master's wife, told her what he was about to do. She said, my husband probably won't appreciate you baptizing a white man. Jack said, I got to do what God called me to do. So Jack baptized the man. And he was put to the pier until he passed out. That entered this master chamber to render a death blow for his head. I got power with that, God. But the problem I have is that next master Samuel, whipped the peerling from the bullwhip until next passes out. Next entered this master chamber to bring a death blow towards him. I got problems with that. The problem I have is that this next term that Nate Parker has given us is individualistic and acts are retaliatory. What we've learned from that so far is that was a holy man. And he got caught. So I appreciate Nate Parker giving us a net that is individualistic as retired for. Let's go to the next one word and see what his actions would be called. In the introduction, of the confession, these are the first words, next husband. He's talking to the attorney. Counts are great. Sir, you asked me to give a history of the motive, which induced me to undertake the late intervention. That does not call it insurrection. A turn of bread calls it insurrection. The cook calls it insurrection. You call it insurrection. You call it rebellion. That does not say his actions are retaliatory. What does that say about his actions? It's a confession. After this revelation, that caused a revelation. He got a call. When did he get this revelation? 8:10:25. 6 years prior to the so-called insurrection. So what was done in 1831 was not retaliatory. He was going to do it anyway because he had a call after this revelation in the year 1825. And the knowledge of the elements being made to me, I sought more than ever to obtain true holiness before the day of judgment should appear. And then I began to receive true knowledge of faith. And from the first step of righteousness to life without being perfect. But the Holy Ghost was with me and said, behold me, I stand in the house. Another prophet had gone and said, Samuel Turner died in 1822, 9 years before the so-called insurrection. So when that went into the master chamber to render a death blow, they could not have been Samuel Turner. Because Samuel Turner died 9 years while Turner. Now, there's an explanation for that. Perhaps he came back to life. But I don't believe that. I believe he was still on ice in 1831. This guy went to hell. Satan said, if you bring me back three souls, I'll let you return to earth and live your life to the fullest. The guy said, no problem. I know a murderer, a witness, and a self-giver. Satan said, now, I don't want him. I'm going to get the minimum. I want to feel. I want a Sunday school teacher, I want a deacon, and a priest. I say that because it's nothing for that to kill the one who puts them for theism. That would be an explicit or retaliatory. Oh, you did it, you killed the good guy. Not that he had done anything to you, but he would kill your mouth. And you got to call him. And the first to be last. And the last to be first. Either you're going to have to call or you're not. And that's what I got to talk to you about. Page 9 and 10 of the confession. Page 9 and 10 of the confession. In 1828, that's his call. His ministry would last 3 years, and he would die. In 1831. This is next year, of May, 1828, I heard loud voice in heaven. Now, Spirit instantly appeared to me and said, the serpent was loose, and Christ had laid down the yoke, he had borne for the sins of men, and that I should take it on, and fight against the serpent. For the time was fast approaching, for the first to be last, and last thing he got. So the subject was different. Well, his master was a harsh master or a good master. He got called. The first would be lightning, and last would be first. Page 9 of the confession. It was observed that that killed the first blood. It was observed that that killed the first blood. He commended the home of his master, Lord Christ. I entered my master's chamber. It being dark. I could not give a death blow. He had to glance his head. He sprang from the bed and called his wife. it was his last word. Was that his last word? Will, one of that disciples, gave him dead what you all had. And this is tragic. He had the same faith as they made in me. I might have forgotten earlier, but his master is the 1830. So that could not have been his master in 1831, according to the birth of the nation. The birth of the nation is the next master as time returns. That is nice. Another problem I have in the movie, The Birth of the Nation. Nick Parker left off the baby in the crib scene. How can you leave off the baby in the crib scene, Nate? It actually happened. Day 7 of the confession. The murder of his family is 5 in number. Was the birth of a moment. Not one of them awoke. But there was a little infant sleeping in a cradle that was forgotten. That's his sight. Killed everyone in the house. They get down to go all the way when his boy said, man, that house you just left. But there was a baby in the tree. We forgot to pull the tree. He wanted to go back to pull the tree. What do you tell me that for? That was no baby killing. That love took. And I can think that Johnson was here. Talking to the boss in his head, please don't ask me to do this. It's just a baby. That baby is going to fuck kill nothing. Not necessarily. He might be with John Brown type. Nah, man, he would be like his dad. He'll grow up and he will kill your baby. That's a kind of rascal with this stuff. I believe that turned to the book of Exodus. Chapter 11, verse 4 to 6. The book of Exodus, chapter 11, verse 4 to 6. This is from the Authorized King James Version. And Moses said, thus says the Lord, about midnight, I will go out in the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die. From the firstborn of the Pharaoh, the sentence upon the throne, even unto the firstborn of the maidservant that's behind the mule, and all the firstborn of all the beasts. And there's the great cry from all the vast people, such as there was not like before, never tell us that it ever be again. I believe that great that pastor, he looked at his disciples, Henry and Will, and said, tell those Henry, I'm sorry. You got to take one for living. Another problem I have with the movie, The Birth of the Nation, there's a blood on the corn scene. A blood on the corn scene. But this parcel does not explain why there's blood on the corn. Naturally, it's an ear corn. He picks up an ear corn and leaves with no explanation. You have to go to the professional to find out what that's about. This is a nine of the professional. This is helpful. I looked and I saw the forms of men in different attitudes. And they were nice to me, God. They were of the same as men. Therefore, for these to wear, even if they were standing on the cross, on Calvary, for redemption of sinners. And I wanted to bring this at these miracles and pray to be informed of a discernment of the meaning thereof. And shortly afterwards, while laboring in the field, I discovered drops of blood on the corn and fell to the deep in heaven. And the Holy Ghost had revealed itself to me. and they explained the miracles they had shown me. For as a dove Christ had been shed on earth and had ascended to heaven for the salvation of sinners, but now returned to earth in the form of humans. How could you read that out of the movie, Nick? Nat Turner gives attorney Grace power now. Nat Turner, attorney Grace, power now. Attorney Thomas R. Grace is Nat's attorney. However, the entire time Nat is talking, Grace is continuing the Nat is a fanatic. Grace knows Nat is a holy man. How do I know this, John? I know it's because when a person is speaking, you have quotation marks at the beginning of the conversation. The quotation marks at the end of the conversation. You only put quotations in the context of a person's conversation when that person makes a reference to something else. That's the Bible. At no time does that say he's coming out of the Bible. He doesn't mention chapters. He doesn't mention verses. The fact that Grace is doing this, putting words in four cases, means that Grace knows the Bible. He's putting it in four cases. Down all we have, if I say, give me dividends or give me doubt, before you print that, you better put it in four cases. Because it's not an intelligent original. And you don't be subject to slavery. So Grace is going through the whole confession and put that word in quotation because they know the Bible when you see it. Now, they doing this to get it easy for me because I know Bible, but by Grace putting words in quotation on the avenue to take that, he put the quotation, put that online, it's going bam, that's the book of Matthew, bam, that's the book of Luke, bam, that's Mark. That's all I had to do. So I'm going to take that confession and match it up to Scripture. Page 9 of the confession. Christ said, lay down the yoke. I forgot to tell this to him. I'm coming to him. Page 9 of the confession. Christ said, lay down the yoke. He is born for the sins of men. And that I should take it on. By the gift of service. For the time was fast approaching. For the first to be last, and last to be first. That's in Matthew, chapter 20, verse 16. Matthew, chapter 20, verse 16. 10 days verse. So last to be first, and the first last, for many be called, but to be chosen. What is a yoke? A yoke is a wooden bar or frame. If you put on the neck or head of two animals, used as a cow or ox or some animal, now you have twice the horsepower. That means if he hooked up with Jesus, his burden would be light. Without flowing, one day it's not flowing. Without praying, one day it's not flowing. The Spirit spake to me, said, seek ye the kingdom of heaven, that all things shall be added unto you. Otherwise, King James Version, Luke, that spends a lot of time in Luke. Luke, chapter 12, verse 31. But rather, seek ye the kingdom of heaven, that all things shall be added unto you. Hence, for he who knoweth not the will, and doeth not, shall be beaten with many stripes. And thus have I seen from you. The same passage is about. Luke chapter 12, verse 47, authorized King James Version. That servant, which knew his Lord's will, and prepared not himself, neither did according to his will, shall be beaten with many stripes. Now, after all that, look, I celebrate it. Still insinuating that is some type of fanatic and not a holy man, He knew that was a holy man we had to trust. Page 10 of the confession. This is what we had said. Do you not find yourself a saving man? He said, do you not find yourself a saving man? In other words, that now you know that death is knocking at your door. Do you not find yourself a mistake? And that says, was not Christ crucified? You talk about killing me. Then I said, he said, was not Christ crucified? You said that's all funny. So he was always aware of what he was doing. Mark chapter 10, verse 32 to 33. Mark chapter 10, 33. This is authorized King James Version. And they were in the way going up to Jerusalem. And they were in the way going up to Jerusalem. And Jesus went before them. And they were amazed. As they followed, they were afraid. And they took up in the prayer. And began to tell them what things should happen unto him, saying, behold, he go up to Jerusalem, and a son of man shall be delivered unto the chief priests and unto his scribes. They shall condemn him to death. That church was headed towards Jerusalem to liberate African people. He was doubting because a prophet must die in Jerusalem. Here's the aftermath. After that time, the court that convicted him was destroyed and rebuilt. They didn't want the house that the convicted man did. He built the court with a similar looking court. They just tore out the old court and built a new one instead. The governor, when speaking of the crime, never called that name. He wanted to bring light to it. He used things like criminal, murderer, fanatic, the day that you would lose their terrible. That would have to have religious service unto the Bible. A white person had to use the entire time you're going to church. The head of a slave was a slave or a stick, but being taught of that terrorist rebel as a warning to future rebels. Street names like Black Man Signpost Road and Hanging Tree Road will come to mind. This is what would happen to you if you tried to overthrow an unjust system. With all this in place, that still is. They tried to kill the spirit, but they couldn't. So they got rid of one thing that was connected to that, and that was Jerusalem. We're here today to determine if Jerusalem, Virginia was changed to Portland, Virginia because, number one, the village was incorporated into a town and they renamed it Portland. Number two, when the people from Jerusalem took the train to North Virginia, they were teased because of Arabs from Jerusalem, or was the rules of Virginia changed the court of Virginia to raise our minds the remnant of Nat Turner who met his state at the hands of the court, then named court. It's up to you, ladies and gentlemen, to decide you have to hear the evidence. I rest my case. John, I rest my case. Before we get to some questions, when we began to stand up as George Floyd putting the feet on the service statue and statue thrown in the water, I asked myself, is that a revolution? Now, this radio last night, and again, sometimes we call revolution. Now, revolution is a regime change. Sometimes they make a sacrifice because if it has not changed economic system, if it has not changed your life politically than it was a revolution. Sometimes it didn't make sense. My elder said, you can compromise on your tactics, but not your principles. To do so is not to have it. So their principle is to keep on saying, but they will make some success. They will make a tactical move. For example, there's a statue. Sure, the Confederate statues are gone. There's a statue in front of the Virginia Museum called Rumors of War by Keontae Wack. Rumors of War. It's a statue of an African who's been up, and I think he may have next to shoes, right? But the motto is, get through it. You've got to remove the Confederate statue. Now you got Africans keeping your memory alive. Sometimes I could be called a killjoy. When they had the Michael King Memorial in Washington, D.C., I had a problem with it. This is our day. If I can even say happen, I got a problem with it. I couldn't figure out the problem at the time, a cat, what the streets I next it on. The problem I have is that I see King and Malcolm and Vice. How are you going to fight with your arms folded and no feet? You will think they can be thinking differently. The king's side is arms folded. Now, you only have decaf. So what I'm saying is that a lot of times you think you've got a revolution. All they're doing is making some sessions and you have it with them. You're the ally of the same guy. All right,
Bob, you got questions?
Y'all got questions? I'm only going to take questions written down. I'm sorry. I got reason for this. First of all, comments from the floor. Comments from the floor, first of all, this one.
Comments, thoughts, ideas, responses.
Now, I assume you don't like to be done. I assume I put you in sleep.
Okay, we got one here.
The conversation itself is very enlightening. There's a lot of information that I didn't know when it came to the National Rebellion, and I just want to say thank you for having given the information that I was ignorant to before.
I'm glad you said it because and I would respond to comments. Because people probably did only reason they did it because they wasn't. The only reason they did it because this project right and valid, that would be individualistic and retaliatory. He was going to do it anyway because he got a problem. So how many times when our boys go off to Vietnam and Iraq and other areas, right, and you lose your son or your daughter for to make the rich picture? You don't have any problem with that. But you got a problem with that too because no one has presented you that way I started presenting today. You always got national perspective of where a diamond has a problem. They pop. Wait, they're coming to us.
Hi. I want to thank you for doing this lecture, man. It's very, very nice. I remember two of them first met.
Yeah.
And they said, now it's and I thought it every time you speak up, you know, so
let me tell you about this brother, Ryan. I was lost. They gave me a taste of a nickel by calling you what? You know how we do. We take a book, we put it on the drop, and just let it sit there. The book stayed there for a whole year. I had gone in a nearby university. I was going to college the next day. I said, I'm going to college with this book tomorrow. I'm going to read this book tonight. I got this book. The book was so good. I read 10 hour book. I went to the vicious office the next day. I said, can I have my $700 back? Yeah. This guy is in the the Mexican black man. However, I took the book out of his hand. and said, you don't need a brother. All you need is Jesus. And his brother started to give up on him. Matter of fact, he did give up on him. He was sitting in his cell. I hope I don't get close to this. Right?
Okay,
he said, come on, one more here. He said, I can't let you take another one out of me. He put his life down the Bible. He said, I'd be part of it now. I'm not going to be the whole thing. This is his last attempt to reach me. Typical of mine. The thoughts that flow within the sound of my mind fought me. Quench my mental thirst. But the value of the thought, that the reality of Christmas, and the force that comes to fight against those that rise above the Christmas, is only a sign. The stereotype concept about those that are prison will always be. I ask myself, and I ask you, why is it so hard for man to grasp to understand that imprisonment is a created condition? Before you see, my friend, I do consider you to be my friend. This state of being that I'm a part of at this phase of my life is only a condition of equation by a people who know that oppression has always been and will always be. You may ask yourself why, but the answer is very simple. If you were able to get your hands upon the book of the great wise men of our history and the history of European, you will find upon ours the black man being brought to this land. The outcome of being brought here was the servitude, no more and no less. The words were so inspiring, I had read this education Negro. I said, brother, I know you can't reach me. I don't know what's going on that I'm not even grasping the sense. I asked one thing for you, though. He said, exactly, Bob. I never think it, but I was at Beaumont. I was power standing, I was at power standing, wrestling center. A master student prison. I never got it when I was there. But then I met George Grant. He gave the fifth education of a Negro. And then George introduced me to Bruce Bishop, who will be key speakers 2 weeks from now, 24th this month, I believe. Bruce had a store in Durham, North Carolina called the No Book Store. And he was a teacher at one university. Here's the professor saying the same thing the brother in prison was saying. And I realized I could have gotten the message earlier, but it came behind a prison wall that I rejected. And it's more questions of harm. Any more comments? All right. Comments? Oh, you got a question, right? But Thomas, go ahead.
Hello, everyone. If he had taught me a lot, because that's the law school's not history in Black history, I was doing a Black cancer. I have some big experience, but I don't talk in the college. And from learning from that, that's important to keep my silence in the mold. Because they're the ones, they're the ones. So we're always learning from somebody who knows more than you. So if you could see it, that's all I'm saying, because they don't know most of the time. That's why I think. So thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Any other questions? All right. All right. Y'all keep them here for a change.
So I don't want to take away from what you're pushing, but I believe that it's more so with what went on with Nat Turner and all of Black history than just Christianity and, like, putting a religion in it. So I brought 3 books to say, and I feel like it's more to teach than just the Christianity part of it. So what can we say about Black history without putting just Christianity? Christianity, all, like, intertwined.
Okay.
always been taught, tainted, and perceived in a white wife, and that's not fair. But the biggest thing is now we have to be able to bring our voices and put it in our perspective, regardless of what that perspective is, because not everybody has the same religion. Not every black person wants to celebrate the same thing. We're also in a time now that we're inspired by different things, and we're looking to different perspectives, different people from the African diaspora that we were never taught before. And with that, we have to be open to different perspectives and different religions and see what those can also teach us. But I also do want to say thank you so much for the knowledge that you have brought to us, because there's a lot of things that I have never knew. There's a lot of things that I'm still learning, and, you know, I'm still fresh in the game. But we got to be able to continue our work to better our community and bring more knowledge to the table. This work has already been started for us. Our generations before, they put in the work for them, you know, through the civil rights era, through the antebellum period, they put in the work. So how is my generation and generations after me going to be able to keep that work going? And the biggest thing about that is the thing the biggest thing about that is to be able to look at things from different perspectives, different religious aspects, things like that. Black history is never supposed to just be centered around one religion, one perspective, or anything, because as you can see, that's been the problem lately. So now it's time to look at things anew.
How do you overcome burdens and weariness and children to come together? As George said earlier, regardless of whether you believe weariness is an actual doctrine or not, because the ancient African myths and things like that were spiritual wisdom. The part is, regardless of whether the letters are Christian or not, do we do this thing? We do. When I was going up to the Avon Redbone, what difference does it make to a color of a special gift? Well, we were taught that doctrine, we were taught that it's doctrine, you put your lovely, your light skin, you're more beautiful. These are a whole lot of things. So how do we overcome the problems of the program factors and constant reading and also consequence? Somebody asked the question, how do you know what's right and wrong? Consequence. You got good wrong consequence, and you got bad consequence. If you got sales girls and look off of the shoulders, then you know something wrong with that. Otherwise, you wouldn't die from the top song. Even a person who's a psychopath, like Jeffrey Dahmer, realized there's consequences. Because his mad victim, they was having a verbal altercation, his officer, that was his level, they was having no level before, all right? Why would you lie if you didn't know the consequences? But he knows the consequences. There's good consequences and there's bad consequences. What if you're doing things so far, don't see that happen, though? So you need to say it. Some programs like this, like this thing should be full and it happens. That. Last question is a mob of Mississippi. What's wrong with, do we think the black community is holding? How can we begin to heal them? How do they show up? What's the problem? You think the black community is holding? How can we begin to heal them? How do they show up? Somebody can help me with this question.
Association of Black Social Workers. And I guess how we can talk about the traumas of enslavement, because we're actually working with that here in Richmond through the Abusable Power Black Family Institute and also on the National Black Social Workers along with ABSVAC. So when we're looking at the traumas that we have faced in the country, they are psychological, okay, physiological, and then there's the genetic impact of wounds that have been passed down intergenerationally, epigenetic. in COBRA right now has a harm report that really goes to science of how our DNA has been impacted from what took place on the slave ships and the dungeons of Elmina and Cape Coast, and how again those traumas of anxiety, depression, and bipolar disorders, all those particular psychological and physiological ailments, and hypertension, diabetes, have all been passed down genetically. All right. And so that's a growing body of science that kind of proves that what has happened to us. So how we heal that is that, first of all, we got to understand white supremacy denomination, which most of us do not realize or really understand. The white supremacy is entwined in every system here in the United States. All right. And secondly, the white supremacist main objective was the de-Africanization process that takes us out of our whole cultural, spiritual, biogenetic processes that makes us African people and connects us to thousands of ancestors that have gone on before us. So with that being said, we are out of balance and are out of order based off of the cultural dynamics. And then we also experienced this over 400-plus years of micro, macro, and meso attacks daily here in the United States. Okay? So that's the piece. So the end game, Brother George was talking about Kwanzaa, what Melania Karenga was doing and the other cultural nationalists were doing back in the 60s and 50s, that was really a resurgence of the resistance movement going back to Mr. Hotel, back to Bianchi, to Haka, and all those ancient Africans, they were using African culture to restore balance.
Yes, yes.
The ancient primal blue-black energy of Merowe, of Napata, of that ancient African source that we all come from, is a healing and balance that takes part in that when you are re-Africanized. Okay. And it goes beyond your, you don't want to talk the religious piece. All right. You don't want to talk about that, because that's so kind of charged. We are Africans regardless whether you're in the Khan, Yoruba, Manding, Malinke, or whatever. All right. We are African people. And when we get back into our cultural realignment, then we become whole again and complete. African culture is the only thing that's going to save us from the attacks of the British, the Dutch, the French, the Portuguese, the Asiatics,
come on,
the Arabs, it's African culture. In its most complete, its most uncompromised, and its most unadulterated form. Okay? So we've been de-Africanized, now we got to do what? Re-Africanize.
Come on.
And then after we do that, the analogy is almost like a dam. White supremacy is the dam that kind of gets in the way of us connecting to the ancestors. Once you start these rituals, once you start connecting to the
You know me?
You don't?
No.
Oh. You never seen me before? You never seen me before?
No.
You sure? You don't know my name? You never met me. I'm a stranger. Huh? Yeah, you got it. My name is Marvin. Which one is it? My name is Marvin.
Thank you.
is patriotic domination of culture. And then we are now a heel people, a whole, and a self-determining people. Good job.
All right, Brother Booker.
I just want to say, my issue everywhere, like what's going on, is the same. When we talk about our history, I think we begin in the wrong place. I think we should begin our history by talking about our Father. Whether you call him God, Allah, Buddha, Yahweh, Jehovah, whatever, we need to begin the history conversation of our people with God, with our Creator, the Creator of everything, because that was our beginning, and we lost connection to that. That's the issue that I have each year with. And brother, thank you. And I just want to say, Dr. Elijah Muhammad said, he said that every white person was off the face of the planet tomorrow, that it would still be around for 250 years in us.
Thank you, Brother Booker. All right, we're going to ease into our panel discussion. We've got our panel all set up. So we have a discussion. And the discussion for today is going to be, what do we need to do to change our community now? What do we need to do what? When? Not now. Right now. That's different. All right? So we're going to start introducing yourselves, right? And we're going to start the panel discussion with everybody saying what they think we need to do right now. Yes, sir. Uh-huh, you can give your answer and your pass.
My name is
Car of Christianity and the car of Islam and the car of Judaism
They got out of their car, and then they're walking with them. Are you going to stay in your car? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to stay in your car, or are you going to get out and walk with God? And then you will find the absence of religion, because it's just a tool to get you there, to put you back in alignment with your true self.
Come on.
Come on. But that don't mean that you stay there.
Right.
Right? And so this is one thing that we have to do, is that we have to reclaim our identity in that way, where we can allow for those chains and shackles of religion, right, to fall to the wayside, and we might become more spiritual, more in tune with our nature, and I'll pass on with that. Right, thank you, brother.
That's about my sister Ellison. I am the director of Freedom on the Center. I also been community liaison for the support and the district in the past. So to answer your question, what steps do we need to take to get that to us is basically, I put down proud, privilege, and promise.
Mm.
Right? So we have to be proud of who we are with the change. We have to walk in our pride.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are privileged. We are privileged to the sun, we're privileged to the earth, we're privileged to those that, you know, we are the original man.
That's right. Come
on. So then our promise is what we give back to our children and our children. So I would also say that starting point will be for children, right? But also it takes for someone who wants to be used by the child to refer to him, you know, for participation in the most high house. And do that too.
Working in peace today, y'all. Give a hand. Before we go any further, I want y'all to know that this is an alignment of community-based people. They're regular people like you and me, all right? Nothing up here, nothing down there, and all in between, just regular brothers and sisters who want to share and be doing the work in the community.
I would, I know I think it's the first time I'm saying this, I'm with the University of Software there, and over here by Salo, Analysis Psychologist. I feel like one of the first steps we have to take to actually start to make moves in our community is definitely look within. Definitely look within and educate ourselves. We have to be educated on our history. We have to be educated on how the politics have played a role in putting ourselves in the position that we are in. This is not, you know, white supremacy has been the biggest problem yet. So our education, and you can tell now, critical race theory. Nobody is, they're fighting to not have our history told. They're fighting to not have our perspective of history out in the open. And that's something that we have to fight for. You know, like I said before, generations before us have already done. They have fought. They have done the work. It's time for us to follow that and keep it going. And if we lose our motivation, if we lose our passion, if we are ignorant to our history, then you're going to be able to do that.
All right.
Hi, my name is Keisha Cummings, and so Brother Hassan and two sisters have already said something, so I just want to piggyback off of what they say, everything she says, but in addition to that is unification of us in every single facet. I'm a founder of True Love LLC. I serve humanity. I like to emphasize that. But it appears that I just serve black boys and black men from marginalized communities. And I emphasize to people, no, I just serve humanity. Just that you just don't even include them in humanity. And I serve our sisters, too, because the more and more that I do this work, I realize how protected we are as black females out here. And so I think that the unification is so important. to bring in our community back, for us not to work in silos and for us to be unified, specifically against the ism of white supremacy that affects us in every single manner, whether or not it's education, whether or not it's health resources, whether or not it's economics. To me, it all boils down to economics. And empowering us to be able to thrive in a way that we need to as people. And like I said, I know these brothers and sisters already said that I'm always going to talk about God. You know, in the work that I do, people call me a gun violence advocate. What I try to teach is that it's not a personal thing out here. I mean, we're dealing with it is absolutely spiritual. And so, like you said, sister, we have to walk in forgiveness. The biggest thing is forgiving ourselves first, so that we can teach other people how to forgive, so that we can have understanding for other people, so that people can have understanding for us. And so, and then even walking with our higher power has called us to do. I am one person, I am a Christian. I have crossed on Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. However, I do believe that one die many names. And so that's what I tell the young boys or the young soldiers or the young kings, whatever I reference them, whatever it is for you to tune into something higher than yourself, that's what needs to be done out here. Because us, my righteous soul, we can't do it. You know what I'm saying? None of us to me is deserving, but walking in your spiritual being, which is another consciousness, another dimension that we have to move to amongst us. And so I'm going to pass this to my brother right here.
All right, again, this is Strong Black Hand. Again, Olin Finley, Barack Shepsu, School Social Worker, River Plum Schools, and I'm over at the mighty MLK Middle School. And a lot of my interventions have been focused on black male interventions. I'm from the city, from the south side, we go north side in 81. I'm Barbara was my classmate over at Marshall Walker High School. And I got a pretty big family. And what kind of really motivated me to do this work was seeing what happened to my cousins when that crack cocaine epidemic broke out, you know, back in mid to late 80s. And it's looking at Richmond pre-crack to the late 80s. I remember going to house parties and stuff, at football and basketball games, hanging out all around the city, regardless of where you live. But then once the crack came, that kind of, you know, jacked that up. And then looking at some of my families that got, my family got caught up using and selling, being locked up, or just being gone from using it. So that kind of motivated me to really go into social work to try to tackle, you know, some of these problems that we're seeing going on with our people every day here in Richmond. And so that's why I came to the field. And I've really been focusing, again, on black male interventions based upon the number of our brothers, young brothers that we see that are locked up. You know, it was kind of the crime bill back in the late 80s and 90s was by design, and we really haven't had a response to that. So that's really what motivated me for doing this work. But I guess one of my motivations in looking at this is that how do we turn things around is that we got to have strong families.
All right.
And we look at what happened to us after enslavement, our families were getting together on a daily basis. There was some instances here in Virginia where wives or husbands sold away down south, and folks left Virginia and walked all the way down to Mississippi, Alabama, to try to find their loved ones. And in some cases they found them, in many cases they didn't. But that just shows you the power a family, when our family is whole, when the male and female energy is together and is intergenerational, the family is the smallest unit of nation. And when it's clear and when it's focused, then we have an intergenerational platform to carry on what nation building. And we say, what time is it, people? It's nation time, black people. And we need nation builders. After enslavement, our folks weren't pontificating. They weren't having grand lectures. Because after the end of a 2-3 hour lecture, they don't put up a church. They don't build 4 or 5 houses. And then we look at the infrastructure of
black people here in Richmond, New Orleans, talk about New Orleans, Detroit, wherever we are, we don't have those nation-building skills anymore. All right. So we got to go back to nation-building, being brick masons, carpenters, okay, credit unions, all right. All of those things that can do what? Create and maintain black wealth. All right. That's how we fight white supremacy, is by having a strong, intact family and a powerful, liberating, economical muscle power that can insulate us, and we can do what? Fuel our own economic agenda. And we can't do that in our current state. There was an article in the paper while talking about the number of black folks being turned down by loans at Wells Fargo. Why are we still banking with them? Why? We get up and talk about white folks, talk about the Pepperwood, but we do business with them every blankety blank day. Does that make any sense? So how can we support our oppressors and white supremacy and think that they're going to get their feet off right next? That's delusional thinking. Am I right or wrong? That's delusional. That's not going to happen. And so again, as I close out, coming off the plantations in Virginia, in Maryland, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, wherever we were, they weren't pontificating. They were being nation builders. And one last thing. The most powerful structure here in Richmond is that St. Luke's building that our revered ancestor who has been whitewashed, Magdalena Walker. She was a race woman. She hung out with Ida B. Wells. She was a Garveyite. So can you imagine that woman, those black folk in Richmond, putting up a skyscraper? They weren't talking. They were doing what? Nation building. What time is it, black people?
Nation time.
All right.
All right. All right. I'm encouraging you to take action, right? Today, tomorrow, next week. Just don't sit here and think about, oh, this sounds really good, and get to work. Do something. All right, go ahead, brother.
Hello, I'm Maurice Nevlick. From Richmond. I live on both sides of James, across Richmond, and almost every corner, with an unfortunate path of my life of being dysfunctional family because it's been broken as a culture since before 400 years ago. So just to mention that, just to understand the dynamic of how much we have to push and how much we have to improvise to make something happen. I just want to make sure I mention that first. So I have a school of companies. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm on the board of directors with Richmond Heritage Federal Credit Union. I'm now with Virginia Union University, and also, yes sir, and also I'm a candidate for mayor of the city of Richmond.
Right.
So, you know, what we want us to speak on is, you know, what can we improve in our community and how we can do that? You know, first, you know, of course, it starts with us, a level of commitment. And dedication, where we are not going to stray away after these 28 days are over with, and we not just only have a session in February. Okay?
Come on.
It's going to take consistency. It's going to take sacrifice to give up a good TV show that is good for at least 30 minutes. It's going to take giving up playing spades or going to the club. It's going to take giving up at least 1 or 2 days a month that we can commit to each other, okay? So first off, the thing is we have to be aware of our finances to actually be able to make any leeway and headway in the community, being that in our culture, we hold on to the dollar, the least amount. I think it's 11 days we hold on to our money. We need to hold on to it a little longer.
do something. First off, I just want to make sure that financial awareness, you know, it is something that we do have to constantly look at. You know, we get the money, it go fast, but I just want to mention again, financial is key. Also, what's key is safety. All right, so no matter where we live, I live in Jackson Ward, Blackwell, Fayetteville, Wilkham. I live in all these cities. And I'm grateful to have made it out. But the trauma that we go through, that our children go through, there's a war in our city.
Right.
All right? There is a time where our students, our children go to school shell shock. There's been gunfire that has been going on for maybe throughout the night. Okay,
right.
So that's something to acknowledge, to be accountable. So we have to enforce community policing, okay? Another thing is education. Education doesn't end once they leave RPS. Just to mention, we have to continue education and reinforce and answer questions that the youth just doesn't have a clear understanding about.
Right.
It's going to take for us to become more educated. It's going to take for us to be better teachers to gain more patience so that we are able to build a brighter future for our families, our community, and our nation. So, you know, for me, education, you know, we need to implement, even in the schools, stronger elective courses, whether it is financial readiness, whether it is praise, whether it is college credits, because college, I'm still paying. So it's costly, but, you know, the thing is about being able to move ahead. You know, our youth are very knowledgeable on technology, and it's time to actually have them engaging in cyber and technological fields that's going to advance them financially, but also it's going to put us all in a stronger future in regards to the economics. So we're looking at improving our community with financial accountability, education, and safety. But like I said, it takes commitment. We have to be dedicated. We have to hold each other accountable. We have to make sure that we reinforce these values not only into ourselves but into our children to make it an everlasting mission and successful objective. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Getting short on time, so you can get me, please. We're getting short on time, so we're gonna move through it. I want to do this. Brother Kevin has his books here, right? So go by and make sure you visit with him before we wrap up today. We got two questions, right? And I also want to get the audience involved in this. On this side, right, I want to talk about technology, right? Our children, you see them in the room, right? See the little girl right there, right? Technology is right in the face of our kids all the time. What's going in, right? On this side, I want to talk about relationships in the family, right? How do we begin to sustain the things that we need to do? Technology, right, as we face the new era of technology, how are we going to manage that? Do we put systems in place? And over here, how do we develop the family? Go ahead and introduce yourself, brother.
I thought my time was up.
No, you didn't count me that way.
I want to co-sign with the brother here over the end because there's a prayer point on here beyond our comprehension. And you got the hippo that you do, whatever your religion is, get you that force. We focus on the hippo instead of focus on that force, and we can't come together. If a Muslim and Christian and Jew can't come together, we make whatever it is, it's a trash can. Because we're a human being. We're all one family. We need to work for the best of humanity as a whole. Mm-hmm. Now, it's about to everything up everybody said, right? And I hate to stop my book in, but it just doesn't have to be on time, right? The voice wasn't the culture that you make. What's culture? The culture is the glue that binds people together. Culture does what people are fertilized, it does the soil and cultivates the soil. It has to make things grow. The culture has to keep it grow. What are the culture? History, religion, politics, economics, social art, creativity, it's your arts, music, dance, drama, literature, and psychology. Now, the reason it's called the culture, what's the culture that you make? Because in all those areas, we have adopted European value system. That's why I got this white hand over your head. It pushed all this stuff inside your head. And so what happens is, and we said economics is our problem, all we do is get economics put together, right? So you're familiar with our ancestors because the people that talked to Oklahoma in 1921 had that economic program together. What happened to them? Maybe they had a political program together. If you said politics is our problem, we had a black president. So the point is, in all aspects of people's culture, they got their hands on our heads. Even King James Version. We never asked who had the vision. We don't know. We don't want to know. Right. So the point is, everything is said about it. Religion, politics, economics, all those are valid, right? But we got it from a European value system. So the cheat is divorce Western culture. So often in relationship, a brother will blame a sister for her shortcoming. Or a sister will blame a brother for his shortcoming. The root cause is not each other, but the culture alien to you.
Right.
We have different value systems. Every time we communicate, I made the same mistake. I look in the mirror and if I made this mistake, right? Look at all the documents that I've passed over, right? And I'm looking at a sister who's dark. I'm saying that she's beautiful, right? But the judge is telling me she's ugly. You know what I mean?
Right.
You got to apologize. The brother got to apologize for what he did to the sisters. The sister got to apologize for what he did to the brothers because we're adopting a European value system. So divorce, Western culture, not Jamaica.
Technology, right? I remember reading The Message to the Black Man and a couple of other many different books over the years. And I remember reading that technology was tricknology, right? And I really tried to dissect that and what was meant by that because, you know, a trick is means it's some type of deception in it. And then, like, when you go see a magician, right, you go in there knowing that he's going to trick you. Like, you go there knowing that what's being told you ain't the truth. You're trying to figure it out.
Right.
Right. Technology is kind of like that with a lot of us who are older, right, who are trying to figure out the technology and so forth like that. But the children, right, they are like gods and goddesses of the technology. And we really have to tap into that, but in a different way, right? Because they can show us a lot of things with technology that we may not even really be aware of. Like, their minds function in a different way, evolving with the technology. And we have to adapt to it. There's a difference, right? So it's very important when we deal with technology and our children, but also technology is kind of like fire, too. You know, fire can be destructive or it can be beneficial. It can provide you heat or it can burn everything down, right? And so now how do we monitor the use of that fire? How do we create, you know, barriers for them, boundaries for them with it, and then also become a part of it? Don't just give it to your child. Right, and walk away and let that babysit your child.
Okay.
Be a part of it. Right, make sure that you know what they're looking at. Make sure that they know that you know. Right, and then we can start to build a foundation because you know technology is most definitely. I want to say I don't want to say that it's the future. Right, because I think that we do need more vocation. I think we need more hard skills. I think that we do need more builders. Right, but how do we get the technology? How do we use the technology to promote that? Right, how do we use the technology to teach them to be a plumber? Right, to be a mason, a brick mason? Right, how do we use it in that fashion? And so I think that technology is a very big part of it, that we just cannot become technological cavemen, right? And I'm end with that quote, but what I mean by technological cavemen is that we advance technologically, but we are deprived spiritually, morally, right? We depreciate and value in that way. So let us not become technological cavemen just because we have an advanced tool and we think that that's the end all be all of us. Everybody out here know, right? Y'all know good and well that you don't remember phone numbers no more. You don't remember phone numbers no more. So if you lose your phone, then what?
You late.
Keep us up.
That's maybe me because we got to get through, okay? All right, so outside of family, right? We have to put the values into the family. We have to be patient with each other, energetic and polite. But we have to reinforce the values that we need for our family. Not the standards that are there at this point, and it leads over technology. It calibrates the antisocial and big antisocial relationship. So it's going to take for us in the aspect of relationships to become more influential to each other and more empowering to each other and not being harsh and criticizing each other so heavily. We have to always say to ourselves, how dare we? Who am I? Because we have to be accountable to make and bridge the relationships in our family. Just to pass on, because I'm sure we should look through on time. But if any questions further, I can answer to them.
All right, back to technology. I remember being in eighth grade and Dumbing Down America by Michael Moore. And Dumbing Down America was just the things that we are doing now. The smartphones. That's why they're called smartphones, because it's making us dumber. We don't have to, like you say, we don't have to remember phone numbers, we don't have to remember addresses, how, where to go, what to cook. They teach us the phone is everything to us, right? And we'll lose our keys. We'll lose a lot of things, but we're not losing that phone because it's kind of like our brain. So one thing that I think we need for our children is to go back to like visuals, which also is better known for like seeing. Seeing is science, technology, economics, math. When they added the A's for art, because it was STEM at first, but now it's cross seeing. So I think those things added will help our generation children.
All right, so the family, I think I kind of elaborated on that a little earlier. But again, I just really wanted to just point out, and when Kibalon was talking about the Western, you know, the Western American culture, you know, the blueprint, you know, has been laid out in front of us, you know, not just right after enslavement, but what the ancestral model is. When we're looking at African culture, looking at the Ashanti, the Yoruba, the Mandi, the Malinji, the Shona, all these very powerful groups, ethnic groups, they were all started by a conglomeration of like-minded families. Okay. Like-minded families that were linked by culture. Many of those cultures were maternal, okay, the maternal line of succession, whereas the European model is what? Paternalistic. So the European model of family, where the men are, I guess, the focus and dominant, that goes against the African order, all right? Because we have with the royal queen mothers that kind of have established where we are. So, again, you know, we've been so alienated by this whole cultural dynamic is that we have allowed the white man's affairs in pretty much all of our personal dynamics now. And I watch TV, I watch the social media, and I'm watching the kids at work and how a lot of family dynamics are playing itself out in the public art, in the public atmosphere. You know, that's uncouth. That's uncivilized. So when you have a pressing family matter, you got to hash that out behind closed doors. As Brother Malcolm says, you know, everybody, you're going to be on point, you stand on your square, and you come out a united front. But that's not where we are right now. And unfortunately, we have a lot of numbers that are not adding up for us because now we're looking at biogenetically, there's going to always be more women than men. That's just how it is, scientifically and biologically. But I want to go back to the crack cocaine epidemic. That crime bill locked up thousands of brothers. It is still being locked up right now, and there has not been a response. So do we say, well, that was that harm is just to that brother that did or whatever, or is that harm to the black family? So the harm is to the black family. It was intentional. It was designed. It's government sponsored. And that's a part of the micro and the macro, the meso attacks, is to destabilize the strongest unit in black culture is the family. All right? So we don't have to debate about that. So now what we got to do is do what? Now go back to that model of understanding what we are up against, these different European viewpoints and worldviews that we have espoused, along with those attacks, and do what? Go back to being men and women, getting together, having babies, having grandchildren. And one of the other reasons why they're so adamant about destroying our families, the white birth rate is in decline. It's in decline all throughout the world. They ain't having babies. All right? So then do what? So then you want to stabilize our stuff because now you are in decline. So we got a lot of work to do. I don't think we can really answer that question. It's so this problem is so massive. But we got to figure out how do we make the family the central sovereign ruling body for the black universe. So I've committed myself, and I hope everybody else commits themselves to that, and we're going to turn this thing around. Midas.
So just to speak on that, so convenient, but me to speak on technology, huh? I'm the youngest up here. All right. Now, technology, I feel, definitely has its pros and cons. That's the biggest one, obviously. Like you said, smartphones. Smartphones are meant to basically be a brain. For, you know, there's a lot of things we don't know. There's a lot of things I learned off of YouTube. Everybody know YouTube University. All right. We don't learn what we need to know from YouTube. But I feel as long as technology don't start to replace the things that are hands-on, like Mr. Hassan said, we have to be able to have our hands-on knowledge, have things taught to us, because there's a lot of things that we do not know. I will always press the issue that my generation don't know a lot. All we're doing is continuing with the generations before us did. And technology is not going to give us all of that information, because there's things that technology, you know, has from us and deceives. You know, yellow journalism is now technology. They used to have it in papers and stuff and, you know, ads that tell us things that weren't true, and one of the big things that happened, you know, with the wars and stuff. They do that to turn each other against us. You know, we can't be turned against each other, because that's dangerous.
Right.
Technology will do that if we allow it. But if we need to use technology as tools and resources to educate ourselves, we also have to learn the wisdom from our elders, because those are things that technology cannot pass down to us. There's history that we have not learned that had to be taught through word of mouth because they did not want us to know it. So if they're not going to teach it in schools, why do you think they put it on our phones? All right. So with that being said, we have to be able to use technology for good, but also understand where technology lasts.
I'm in the middle, so I'm just going to answer this. I'm like the least technological person here. Like, when people are talking to me, I'm like, I'm on a kindergarten level. But I thank God for being in the middle, because I have a challenge with technology, a huge challenge with technology, because the main thing that it doesn't teach you is how to be a human. It doesn't teach you emotion. It doesn't teach you empathy, all right? And so technology, unfortunately, has been raising our kids, specifically our black boys, and they're on the tech for our black boys when it comes to our music. But that's a whole other thing. And so I want to get back to what this brother said in terms of us learning or getting away from
and Brother Sessions teaches me a lot with this in terms of when he's speaking, the European value system, right? That gentleman in the back, Mr. Booker, is the first person who introduced me to being woke, right? And I remember calling him saying, Mr. Booker, that's about forgiving ourselves, and I'm answering a family question right now. I said, Mr. Booker, he had a conversation, he's an elder, and so we used to come and sit on the foot of the elder and let them speak to us. And when he spoke, I came home and I said, Mr. Booker, what's going on with me? I'm all love and I got hate in my heart for me. I said, explain to me what's going on because I just love people. And he said, Keisha, it's okay. He said, when you find out the truth, that is the first phase of you finding out the truth. Hate and anger. He said, it's going to go away. I said, because I'm mad, because I've been lying.